Who are the Mountain Meisters?
Committing to the goal and galvanizing you and your team behind that one single focus.
Being at peace with that fear and being okay with it.
You gain a real appreciation for your life and for what you have.
Learn about their extreme lives on Rock, Snow, and Ice 5 days a week with your hosts, Russell Wilcox and Ben Schenk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mountain Meister. This is Ben.
Hey, guys. It's Russell here, too.
Today on the show, we have Brody Levin. Brody is a professional skier, photographer, author, and all-around outdoorsman. He was recently named Solomon's first four-season athlete and is committed to completing his ascents and descents in a human-powered approach. Brody lives in Salt Lake City, Utah, but his work and adventures take him all around the globe. Brody, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you.
Yeah, great to be here, guys. Thanks.
So, Brody, what do you mean by self-powered ascents?
Yeah, so my focus is on ski mountaineering, which is ascending these technical lines, right? Using ropes and crampons and ice axes and rock climbing and mountaineering techniques to end up on top of the same peaks that a lot of people would take helicopters to ski. Hmm. And then participating in steep skiing techniques in order to safely get down these mountains. And you're constantly, you know, dealing with avalanche hazard and other like mountain problems. But yeah, that's kind of skiing that I like to do.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show. I was doing a little bit of research on your life and my head just kind of like exploded when I was reading all these different things. You started out as a teenage DJ and then you moved on to aerial freestyle skiing and then riding your bike across the country. And I don't even know what you're going to do next. Could you just make an attempt at describing a little bit more about yourself to the listeners?
I kind of live like this, I guess, kind of transient lifestyle. I haven't gotten, like, I get super into something and I do it, you know, 110%. It's not that I get bored quickly, but, you know, I get bored quickly and then I move on to something else. And I like kind of setting these projects and these goals and going about trying to accomplish them. So when I was 9 years old and I was like, I want to be a DJ, I kind of jumped in head first. And by the time I was 13 or 14, I had like a full-time business that I was running. And then I was like, you know, like, I want to go to college. And then I was like, you know, in college. And then 4 years later, I'm like, okay, I'm out of college. I want to be a professional skier. Now here I am.
What were some of the events in your life that actually like triggered these crazy changes in direction?
I think that I've always been really like business and entrepreneurially minded. I'm really interested in that part of the world, that part of the way like commerce works. But it doesn't mean I want to be wearing a suit and going to like my corner office every day, you know. So I've tried to kind of take that interest and apply it to other parts of my life. I decided, you know, to start a business, but it wasn't going to be a traditional business. And I decided to go to college for business, but I studied more like the philosophy of business and like the theory of economics, you know. And I decided to try to be a professional athlete, but I wasn't just going to, you know, sit in the gym and lift weights all day. Instead, I like partner with great brands and I try to like actually help them as a company.
Very interesting. And to be honest, what you do is not the status quo. And I think that's really cool. And in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd kind of describe what you do this way. And I was having a little bit of trouble just like Russell was. But so the typical path is to find a career and then you live your life based on that career. And you've kind of found a way to live the life that you'd like to live and then let your work flourish as a result of that. Do you think that's an accurate way to describe that?
Yeah, I've never heard it put that way, but I think that's totally true. Like I finally found a way to turn my life and my interests and the activities that I do into my job and not vice versa. That's totally accurate.
So the question is, because you're kind of a pioneer in that regard, the question is it sustainable?
Ooh, well, the answer is yet to come, huh? I mean, I think what you're describing, like you said, that's kind of non-traditional. I think that's totally true, especially given I'm from Ohio, you know, like we're used to living that same lifestyle that you're explaining. So to kind of not only get out of the traditional paradigm of, you know, career life sort of thing, but to get out of this Ohio paradigm of like, you know, definitely not moving to the mountains, right? That was a difficult thing to do. But it's awfully new, right? So I couldn't tell you if it's sustainable. I'm using my head to try to make sure that this is something that can move forward. It's like a very dynamic thing that I'm doing. And it was interesting listening to some of your podcasts with like the past athletes you've had, because they describe this format that they're saying is what it means to be a professional athlete. And they're kind of saying it in such a way that like it's almost a fact, you know, like this is how it is to be a professional athlete. You do A, you give B, you get C, you know, and I was kind of sitting there like, wow, like that's really not how I teach in my work world, you know, it really, really isn't. And in that regard, yeah, I do it a bit differently than others. But I think one reason I'm forced to do it differently is because I'm not a world-class athlete. I'm not the best skier. I'm not the best climber. So instead, I'm more of like an everyday athlete trying to share my stories and inspire other people.
Yeah. So in my opinion, I think that what you're doing is very sustainable. And the only reason it is that way is because you have found something that you absolutely love. And if it wasn't exactly for you, I don't think it would work. But since you have found what you love, I think it works really, really well.
Yeah. Like if I was an accountant and I was like, you know, like I don't love accounting, but I can go to work every day and I can make it through the next 35 years. It's sustainable because you love it enough, you know? Mm-hmm. But because everything I do is so self-motivated, like I have to come up with these projects, you know? Like if I'm going to bike across the country, no one's sitting there telling me to do it. My sponsors aren't being like, hey, like you should probably be biking across the country right now, you know? I completely have to come up with these things. And that comes out of, yeah, just a mm-hmm. pure love of sweating and getting tired and being sore the next day.
Yeah, to continue that, I want to quote you from your website, brodylevin.com. And you say, you spend your time thinking, buying plane tickets, kayaking, climbing, skiing, biking around the city, and writing. And then the mountains actually bring the life out in you. So all those activities are awesome. And I'm very jealous that you get to do those on a day-to-day basis. But what I'm most interested in is, what are you actually thinking about? Like, what's going on to develop these strategic plans you have to make it so you can live your life without having money drive you?
I definitely like to consider the story that I will come back from a trip or from, you know, an adventure with before I go. Because I get asked all the time, like, what do you like actually do? What are you being paid for, right? Like, that's kind of a core question mm-hmm. as far as like my job goes. And like, you know, like we already said, it's really hard to explain. And so I have to put thought into what I'm going to come back with, the story that I could potentially come back with, what can be inspiring to other people, what will make people go buy this piece of equipment or buy that plane ticket to go there or get out for a run or go for a bike ride. So when I'm thinking, I think that's what I'm thinking about. And I'm also thinking about how to like best move forward in my career, just like everyone else thinks about, and how to have the best adventure possible. I think that's kind of the core here.
Something that I don't always think about is you come back from these journeys and you have these awesome stories, but a lot of it was kind of planned, like you were hoping certain things might happen, but just very interesting mm-hmm. to hear about. Something else that you mentioned was how your sponsors aren't poking you to go ride your bike across the country. What do your sponsors want you to do to keep you on board?
Ooh, I think that's a good question. And I think a lot of it comes down to kind of like trust and maybe like a proven line of these kind of trips, right? Like they know that every month or whatever, I'm going to be doing something that's kind of weird and stupid and like human powered and really tiring, you know? And I've been doing that long enough now, not that I've been doing it for a long time, but long enough where they see like Brody loves to do this stuff. He loves to go out there and he loves to come back with great stories. And they just expect me to do so, you know, like they understand that that's my job and they understand that I know that's my job. And they know that I know that that's my passion. And without that, I've kind of got nothing to be doing.
Well, you've been very successful at that. So congratulations. I mean, you've obviously picked up numerous sponsorships and this recently being named the first four-season athlete, quite an accomplishment. From the business perspective, and you talked about, you know, majoring in economics and I majored in finance. And now we're in kind of, and I'm proud to say, and so is Russell, that, you know, we're pursuing this entrepreneurial lifestyle. For you, I mean, you are the business, right? You're the assets, the liabilities, the equity. The photographs are taken by you. You're featured in the photographs. The articles are written by you. The adventures are conducted by you. And if something good or bad happens to that business or to you, that sounds like a lot of pressure and some really intense emotions. Do you ever feel that?
I don't feel that, no. I understand that I am, I guess, a brand in myself, but I don't like put out this like brand image, you know? It's not like story, photo, copyright, Brody11.com, you know, here, sign my waiver. It's like, I'm 26 years old. I'm just going out there and living. And I understand that, you know, I need to stay healthy. I need to stay fit. I need to, you know, once in a while live in a room instead of just in my car, which doesn't really happen that often. But it's like those kind of things. It's not a stressful or anything like that. It's just it's understood that that's what I've chosen to do. And it's completely self-motivated. I turned down job offers when I graduated college. You know, like I could have gone a more traditional route, but I chose not to.
What I've noticed in a lot of your articles that you've posted with Red Bull, a Teton Gravity Research, Free Skier Magazine, and the list just kind of goes on is that you like to incorporate videos along with your writing. Is that a necessary thing that you feel to get the most out of a story?
I try to do these full multimedia packages, right, between video, photo, and the written word, because I understand what I'm doing is not something that the everyday person is going to want to go out and do. Like, I sit there and write about how badly I suffered in a tent while a storm raged outside. Like, that's not going to get people to be, oh, yeah, let's go do what Brody does. That sounds like fun. But it often translates to something interesting and maybe something good to read while you're at work or something good to listen to when you're in the car, right? And the same way that you guys have this podcast to kind of fill in that well, how did you refer to that time that people
the
have?
Idle time.
The idle time, yes. Right? I try to fill in the idle time with something that's inspiring to people to get outside or get doing something that's hard for them, because I've said it before is that, like, I think things that are hard for you are good for you. And if I need to make sure a video isn't a story in order to get that point across, great. I'll like make a video, or I'll have someone make a video, but it's usually me sitting in front of iMovie, you know? And yeah, so I think that full multimedia package is a good thing, especially given all the ways that people consume content these days. Like, my job is fully content production, right? Like, I go out there, I live the story, then I come back and I tell the story, and then I go out there and I share the story. And I use every medium that I know how to use in order to do so.
So you've done a lot of published writing. Russell referred to it. So we're going to dive into one specifically.
Yeah, wait, let me clarify something real quick. Like, I've gotten published before for my writing.
Okay.
But I graduated college having hated writing.
Oh.
Right? Like, I studied business and philosophy and Spanish. And I did this track at my college, Westminster in Salt Lake City, that was really writing intensive, and I did not like it. I had to write a ton, and that was like the big kind of pitfall, in my opinion, of this program, until I graduated and I was like, wow, I'm not the best skier out here, and I need to make some money to pay off student loans. Maybe that all that writing I did in college will come in handy. And what I thought was once a pitfall became something that was absolutely vital to like what would become my current career, you know? And so I started writing, and that helped me produce this content. And then all of a sudden, you know, I could get out with photographers and filmers, and we could produce these full stories. And I was like, oh, like maybe I'm glad I kind of studied writing in college.
So do you enjoy writing now?
I do. It's like a big kind of burden. Like, for example, I got home from a trip last night, and I have all these stories swirling around in my head. But it's not like I'm a journalist, and when I'm out there, I'm like pulling out my voice recorder and my little notebook tablet and taking notes. You know, it's like I'm going out there and like I'm doing my sport, right? Like, we were climbing and skiing big lines on big mountains. And now I'm back and I'm like kind of overwhelmed. You know, I have like 4,000 pictures to go through, like a gazillion gigabytes of video clips. Plus the two photographers and filmers have all of their stuff, and I need to write these stories. And then I need to figure out like who's going to publish these stories, if anyone, and I need to, you know, edit photos and figure out which ones are the best and which going with, and like all of a sudden it gets kind of overwhelming. So would I want to just be one of these pro skiers that can just go to Alaska and film a segment and then like go home and surf all summer? Yeah, maybe, but the writing element, it makes me use my brain, right? Like, that's part of this for me. I don't want to just be like a stunt double out there. I want to have to use my brain, and that's a good outlet for that.
Absolutely. And it's kind of refreshing to see how much thought goes into certain things. And that's what I've noticed a lot about running this podcast is I have a whole new appreciation for the kind of thought that goes into producing a picture, producing a video, or a piece of writing. And one article that you wrote in particular I found very interesting, and that was about the relationship between the photographer and the skier, which again is something that you don't really see when you look at a picture, right? You kind of just see a beautiful view and then a skier doing something incredible, but you don't see what the photographer and the skier were communicating about before, or that the skier had to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to find that perfect time of the day to shoot that photo. So anyway, I first want to understand how the business works. So when you're an athlete, do you get paid a percentage of whatever that photo gets sold for? So let's say you're in skiing magazine, the magazine gets money from ads and subscriptions and then uses that to pay for the photographs?
I don't think I'm going out on a limb by saying that there's like the traditional, maybe old school way of functioning within the industry, and then there's the way by which I'm functioning. Hmm. So I think the traditional way, to answer your question, I think the traditional way is, here is a photo of professional athlete A in magazine B, and on his helmet, there is a sticker of sponsor C, thus he gets paid dollar D based off how big that logo is in the picture.
Okay.
Or something like that. That is not how I function at all. That's called a, quote, photo incentive. And that's how it works across, I think, many industries, but especially across action sports traditionally. I've like developed a whole different model for functioning within the action sports industry that I'm sure someone else out there or other people are out there using a, you know, a similar version to this. But I've developed something that's, you know, it's working for me thus far, and it's, it throws companies off when I go to like my partner brands and I propose something. They're like, oh, we are not used to this. But that's because they're used to functioning in this traditional paradigm of you film with film companies, you shoot with photographers with hopes of getting, you know, you shoot for 30 days a season with the best photographers in the industry, and you hope to get 2 shots published all next season, you know? And then your pictures aren't getting shown until next season. So for like the winter, you're kind of disappearing from the eyes of like the content consuming industry, right? And instead, like, hey, it's wintertime. I'm going skiing every day. I'm not just going to be like secretive and maybe people will see me in the movies next year. I'm going to talk like, hey, it's great out there today. Like, this is what I did. What did you do? I'd love to hear more about your day, you know, that kind of thing.
Fantastic. But anyway, let's get back to the article, because the 4 main points that you highlighted were communication, to be on time, to work hard, and to stay within your ability. And I want to talk about communication. What are you guys talking about? What kind of communication is going on between the skier and the photographer?
I think maybe it's interesting that those 4 points that you just referenced were not something that I came up with, but they were kind of elucidated through the conversations that I had with these photographers.
Right.
I went out and talked with like these best photographers, and I pretty much just said like, hey, like, what makes a good skier for you? And, you know, most of them went on and on and on, and they ranted because, you know, they're used to dealing with a skier who sleeps in too late, or who partied too hard the night before, or who doesn't make a good pole plant. And all of those things are like totally true, you know? And I think like I was doing it partially for myself because I'm from Ohio. I didn't grow up skiing in front of these professional photographers. And all of a sudden I found myself in that situation once in a while, right? So while I want to share this information with everyone else, it's just as helpful for me. And I think these like kind of leadership roles that the photographers take and that the athletes take, and then these following roles that they each take as well, I found them to be really interesting.
Yeah, and every story you're talking about when you're actually publishing a piece is so different, and it all has its own little flavor. Do you always have these little aha moments of things that you think about and you're like, wow, that would actually be a very interesting article?
No, man, that's such a good point. Like, Russell, I'll come home from a trip and I'll be like, all right, that was a great trip. What's kind of the hook? Because that's what the magazine or the websites are going to want to know, right? Like, you went skiing in Iceland, but like, what's the hook? What's going to get people sucked in? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I went skiing in Iceland, you know? So, for example, I went skiing in Romania last year. Totally random, like, weird place to go. And I came back and like, for 8 months, I didn't really know what the hook for the story was.
Wow.
We skied first descents. We skied extremely steep stuff. We skied where no one's ever skied, blah, blah, blah. But in the action sports world, those are all kind of traditional, quote, hooks.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
So I finally wrote the story. And what is it about? It's about my girlfriend walking in the hotel room in Romania unexpectedly. She was living in a different Soviet bloc country. And I was in bed with another girl.
Ooh.
But the other girl was the photographer, and that's who I was traveling with, and we were just sleeping. Like, we were sharing a hotel room. But and like, you know, my girlfriend knew we were in the same bed, but all this stuff. But like, that's like, that ended up being like the hook. Like, there's all this crazy stuff. There was these steep lines, and there was Big Bear there, and all these other things. But those are all traditional. Like, what's the non-traditional thing that you read about in a ski story? One bed for three people, you know?
So is that something that Free Skier would want to publish, or do you have to go to, like, Teen Vogue or something like that? I don't know any other.
No, that's going to be getting, I don't know, it'll get published somewhere. But yeah, those hooks are not obvious for me until one day I'm sitting here, you know, like, going through, like, everything about the trip, and I'm like, huh, like, that's an interesting way to kind of bring the story into, like, a more, you know, appealing way.
Yeah, it's so interesting, and I can't even imagine what it takes to come up with a story like that.
I think he has a natural talent that you're able to realize what is going to be catchy. I don't know if it's something that you've learned throughout your career doing this, or if you think this is kind of, you have a natural creativity.
I don't know, man. Like, I my career has been so short, and I've had to kind of jump into it head first if I wanted to, quote, succeed at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of worked in like a variety in college, right? Like, I was really involved in student government. I was student body president for a number of years, like, at my university, right? And what do I have to do in that position? Like, I have to be able to relate to people across the entire student body. I have to be able to appeal to them. I have to be able to calm their qualms. And I have to be able to, like, you know, like, understand their position and what they want. And it's like, it's seemingly so different, but I think in reality it's not so different. I think it's something that would, like, allow me to relate to, like, a wide audience of people, whether they're skiers or climbers or travelers or, like, computer programmers.
Yeah, I mean, all this stuff you're just throwing out is just gold, and I think we're gonna have to do a part two at some point, because Ben and I have way too many more questions. But I just love the passion that you have in your voice, and I kind of want to transition on to something else that you're passionate about, and that's the organization Protect Our Winters. Could you maybe tell the listeners a little bit about that organization and how you contribute?
Yeah, so I was kind of raised in an environmentally aware family, right? Like, I'm from outside of Cleveland, Ohio, but my parents are both, like, really conscious individuals. And I was raised going to national parks and taking road trips out west and everything. And so when I moved to Salt Lake for college, I, like, kind of found myself being really interested in these environmental initiatives that I didn't really previously know I had an interest in. But all these things happened at Westminster, and I helped all these initiatives happen on campus through our environmental center and through, like, rental programs and through the city. And before I knew it, like, I was an environmentalist, you know, like, who would have guessed? I'm an environmentalist, right? And then once I got into skiing, I graduated college, and all of a sudden, like, that, there was a void in my life in the initiatives that I had been part of in college, which are these, like, environmentally sound, environmentally aware programs. And like, all of a sudden I was just flying around the world and watching my friends drive themselves to the ski resort every day. And, like, I had this kind of dearth of, like, a way to, like, channel my passion for that. And so I kind of just, like, started looking around the industry, and I found Protect Our Winters, which is a nonprofit based out of Lake Tahoe, California. And it was started by Jeremy Jones, the legendary professional snowboarder. And they have, like, a team of athlete ambassadors, which is something that I'm typically really hesitant to join ever. Right, like, these, like, things that are just kind of wishy-washy, and they're kind of arbitrary and meaningless, and like, someone started them and it kind of disappeared. But I started looking more into Protect Our Winters, and I was feeling really good about it, and I climbed and skied Denali, the tallest mountain in North America, with Jeremy Jones last summer. And a couple days after getting back, the director of Protect Our Winters contacted me, and he's like, hey, like, you know, Jeremy had been talking to you, and it sounds like you're really passionate about these same morals that we kind of drive our program through. And sure enough, like, now I'm an athlete ambassador, and everyone comes to me and they're like, great, like, you represent Protect Our Winters and stopping climate change, and you fly around the world. You're a jerk, you know? But no, in reality, like, I commute by bike when I'm in Salt Lake City, right? Like, I do all of my skiing by human powered. I don't go heli skiing. Yes, I fly around the world, but that's my commute for work, which I don't have a regular commute for work, right? But then that allows me to gain this, I guess you could say this, like, this following, right? This connection with people. Mm-hmm. And after I gain that connection with people, it puts me in a position to help educate them about climate change and, you know, what they can do to remedy it. And so now that I'm in this position, like, I'm really trying to leverage that into to completely not only offset all of my travel, but hopefully offset theirs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you have someone like Jeremy Jones starting all of this and just keeping it going, and then you spend some time with him. I mean, for any of the listeners that don't know who Jeremy Jones is, it'd be like if Michael Jordan came over to me, we shot some hoops together, and then he said, oh, well, there's this kids program that I need your help with. I wouldn't even hesitate. I would be there, and Michael Jordan would probably think that I'm a little cooler and I'd be a little happier. So, I mean, just having someone like Jeremy Jones is just such a cool guy to be running this sort of organization. And
that was a pretty unreal experience getting to spend time in Alaska with him, certainly.
We like to ask our guests for a specific gear recommendation because you are kind of a guru, and this might be pretty difficult for you because you do a variety of sports. But if you had to narrow it down to one, what could you recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, if you look around my storage unit of a room that I'm sitting in right now, like in this basement in this house in Salt Lake City, right? Like, all it is plastic bins and boxes and bags of gear, right? Like, that's pretty much all I own. And more than most people, like, my life is really, really gear intensive because mm-hmm. that's what I do every day. I go outside with all of this gear. And as much as it could be like a certain backpack or a pair of gloves or shoes, I'd say it's like my iPhone, because I am completely unable to share my stories without my iPhone. Not only is it like my GPS and my map and everything else, but my iPhone is my only camera aside from my GoPro. I don't carry a big SLR out there, right? And then while I'm out there or as soon as I'm back, I'm using social media to share my stories. Hmm. Also, all done on my iPhone. And it is always with me. Like, I have this really light and fast approach to the mountains, you know, like, I'm cutting my toothbrush in half and I'm ripping tags off my down jackets and I'm counting grams of my food. But my iPhone, it's like, oh, no question, it's coming with me. Like, it's always on me.
Is there one app within the iPhone that you would recommend for our listeners?
Yeah, certainly. You press the power button and then you swipe left to right and you get the camera.
Great.
Very nice. Well, I'm just going to wrap this whole thing up, something that is affecting your life at this time. And what would you see as the biggest challenge for you right now as this, I don't even know how to give you a title, but I guess adventure writer?
Yeah, sure. I think, like, kind of getting, I'm not trying to change the paradigm of action sports and action sport content by any means, because I'm not in a position to do so. So getting, you know, brands to embrace exactly what fans are looking for. And the consumers often just, you know, they want to hear stories about this equipment being used, right? They don't care what stickers are on your helmet in a magazine. But I'm not in a position to change that. Like, what am I in a position to change? And that would be, like, my own skill set, my own fitness, my own technique. And I'm not from Salt Lake City. I'm not from Seattle or Denver or, like, some mountain town or whatever. Like, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and I wasn't raised knowing how to be a world-class athlete or knowing how to make perfect turns for a camera or knowing how to write these stories that people want to read, people who have skied all over the world or climbed all over the country or whatever. And so for me, it's very, very much just honing in on my own technique and making, like, constant improvement, whether that's, like, perfecting a turn for a video camera on my skis or making sure that I'm hashtagging my Instagram pictures appropriately for the people that want to see them. It's very much like an introspective improvement that I'm always working on.
Very interesting. It's a fine balance, I guess, between revolutionizing the industry and then also making sure that you are doing the right things to be successful with the status quo. So I found what you're saying today extraordinarily interesting. Maybe not a typical Mountain Meister interview learning about your sport, but rather learning about your life. So really neat to hear from you. Thank you, Brady.
Great. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, it was so great hearing from you. For any of our listeners out there, you can find more information on Brody at his website, brodylevin.com. You can also see his full Meister profile at our website, mtnmeister.com. I don't think we'll be getting in touch with Apple, but we'll throw an iPhone on there and show you how to use the power button and such. So find those resources and any other information that we have in there. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Brody.
Great. Yeah, appreciate it so much, guys. Good luck with the podcast.
Hey, Meister fans. Thanks for tuning in to Brody Levin's episode today. Make sure you go online and check out more of his articles. He's got some cool stuff on there.
Yeah, check him out. He's also on Instagram, too, at Brody Levin. And we are also on Instagram as well, at Mountain Meister, not MTN Meister. And check it out. You can see what Russell and I are up to, and we want to see what you're up to as well. So if you're on one of your own cool outdoor adventures, tag us at Mountain Meister. We want to see it.
Yeah, and who do we have tomorrow on the show, Ben?
We have Jason Turdeman on the show tomorrow. Jason is a professional luger who competed in Sochi this past winter.
Just picture your biggest friend laying on top of you, and you can't see anything going 70 miles an hour down a track of ice. Check it out next time.